You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When he died in 2005 at the age of 101, the first line of George F. Kennan's obituary in the New York Times called him the American diplomat who did more than any other envoy of his generation to shape United States policy during the Cold War. Kennan devised the policy of containment in the mid-1940s, and his advice and counsel would continue to shape American foreign policy for decades. Throughout his long life, he kept a diary, which sheds new light on his thinking. And Frank Castigliola, the editor of the Kennan Diaries, was a guest on our show in March to talk about what the diaries reveal about Kennan's life and influence. Mr. Castigliola is a historian at the University of Connecticut. He specializes in U.S. foreign relations in the 20th century, and we are re-airing my interview with him now. I began by asking him, how did you gain access to all of this material? We're talking about 8,000 pages that filled 12 boxes, which he wrote over the course of 88 years.
Yeah, well, it's a fascinating project. In 2009, the Kennan Papers became available for research by ordinary historians. Before that, they'd been only in the hands of Kennan's authorized biographer, John Lewis Gaddis. And so in 2009, the papers became open to the general public, so to speak, and the Mudd Library at Princeton was besieged by people wanting to edit portions of the diary or the whole diary and publish it. So Princeton decided to bring some order into that issue, and so they issued a call for proposals, and I submitted a successful proposal. Right.
How did you establish criteria for what to include in the 684 pages of this book?
Well, first of all, the diary is above all a personal diary, and yet Kennan did so many things that were important in terms of politics and in terms of foreign policy. So I really have a singled out political entries, political commentary, because I know historians and the general public would be interested in that. But aside from that, I also selected for the wonderful phrase, elegant sentence, paragraph. Kennan was a wonderful writer, just really a talented writer.
Although you say you may have slighted his chronicling of sailing in Scandinavia.
Right, right, because there are pages and pages and pages of you know, hourly or minute-by-minute description of what the water and the wind was like.
He was born in Milwaukee in 1904 right. To a political family?
No, not really. Not really. His father was actually one of the first tax lawyers. He was an expert on taxes who brought the income tax to the state of Wisconsin. He researched the income tax as it had been established in Germany and then came back to Wisconsin and testified, and it was adopted there. And his mother died, and this is a key point in his life. His mother died when he was only 2 months old.
How old was he when he started writing a diary, keeping a diary?
He was 11. He was 11, 11-year-old boy. And as I have in some of the first entries there, he was running around the city of Milwaukee trying to catch a glimpse of the visiting president, Woodrow Wilson.
He's probably best known today for the long telegram, which he sent to the State Department from Moscow in 1946, and for an article he wrote for Foreign Affairs in 1947 called The Sources of Soviet Conduct, which established the framework for the policy of containment. Do his diaries reveal the evolution of his thinking about Cold War policy?
The diaries, as I said, they're mostly a personal account, but they do reveal the development of his ideas about Russia. Kennan loved the Russian people, loved Russian culture, Russian literature, Russian history, and the diaries certainly reflect that. And they also reveal his growing frustration with American foreign policy in 1944-45. And Kennan, in fact, wrote the long telegram as kind of a way to assert a different point of view in terms of what the U.S. should do with regard to Russia.
And he wrote it from Moscow.
Right.
Did he fully understand the political temperature in Washington at the time?
No, I think that Kennan assumed that there was still more sentiment in the United States than there was for continuing efforts to maintain the wartime alliance. He underestimated the extent to which the public and the Truman administration were already moving away from that.
But we had the Marshall Plan in effect, and he had helped actually develop it. The Marshall Plan was a way of strengthening the wartime alliance, wasn't it?
Not really. The Marshall Plan was, of course, the Marshall Plan was first proposed in 1947 and implemented in 1948. So this is certainly after World War II. And the Marshall Plan actually was offered to all of Europe. But as there was a really dilemma here because Kennan and the other, by this point, Kennan was in Washington as an advisor to Secretary of State Marshall. Kennan and other people around him realized that if the Russians accepted the offer to participate in the Marshall Plan, Congress would never vote the money. And so, but Kennan decided to, as he put it to Marshall, play it straight. Offer it to the Russians, but with so many conditions attached that the Russians would turn down the offer of aid. And that's exactly what happened. And Congress voted the money as a measure to fight communism in Western Europe.
Did the long telegram basically reinforce the policy that many in Washington wanted to pursue?
That's true. That's true. What Kennan did was, as often happens, Kennan presented in a very well-written, kind of very powerful kind of powerful phrasing, sentiments that many people had. And so this became the document which kind of summed up sentiment that was already very present in Washington.
And then what about the article, the sources of Soviet conduct? Did he feel the State Department understood what he was trying to say?
Well, the article is published in Foreign Affairs, so it was directed at the educated public. So basically, the article did for the educated public what the long telegram did for the State Department, which namely was to present in a kind of a forceful, persuasive way the argument for containment.
Now, this is at a time when Ukraine is being reunited with the Soviet Union because the Germans had occupied it during World War II. Did he have much thought about the relationship of Ukraine and the Soviet Union, now, of course, Russia?
Kennan, as I said, Kennan had as strong feelings. I mean, he was always 100% loyal American, but he also had strong sentiments for Russia, the pre-1917 Russian Empire. And Kennan, I think, believed that Ukraine was properly part of Russia.
Russians think so because their history is inextricably tied to it.
Exactly.
But so wouldn't the policy of containment still have led him to support the policy that the United States and its allies are pursuing now?
Well, actually, but Kennan also believed in spheres of influence. So I think what the policy of containment was to limit Russian influence to the areas that were properly Russian, as he would see, which would include Ukraine. But containment was designed to prevent the Russians from moving into, let's say, Italy or France or areas that were properly not part of the Russian sphere.
My guest is Frank Costigliola, who has edited George F. Kennan's diaries. It's been published as The Kennan Diaries. Although 1947 may have been the biggest year of his career, he wrote only a single entry. Why was he just too busy to write?
Well, I think the diary is a way for Kennan to let off steam, a way for Kennan to find a sympathetic ear. He really intended the diary to be read after his death. And so when he was at the peak of his influence, which is 1947-48, he wrote, particularly 47, there's only a single entry, as you said. It's actually a poem. He had the year of the Secretary of State. He didn't need the diary.
Well, he also must have realized that his diary might be of historic significance rather than just a place for him to put down his thoughts and resentments. So did that change what we start seeing in the entries?
Not really, because Kennan was a person who exercised discretion. And as a diplomat, as a high government official, he wasn't going to write down in his diary things that might be secret.
Well, for example, it's well known that he clashed with Dean Acheson, but in his diaries he calls him a man of honor in the highest degree.
Right, but he has less favorable comments toward Acheson in the diary. He thought that Acheson, one thing that Kennan resented was that Acheson, he felt, didn't defend the China hands, people like John Patton Davies and Edmund Club, who had been unfairly accused of being disloyal to the United States. These were State Department officials who saw the corruption in Chiang Kai-shek's China, reported it back to Washington, and then were accused by McCarthy of disloyalty. Kennan felt that Acheson didn't go out on a limb enough to protect those people who were his friends.
Well, on the other hand, Acheson and Truman were put into a bind at that time. They were being accused of colluding with the Soviet Union.
That's right. I mean, that's right. But also, I think that, Kennan had a view that basically the public and Congress should not play a very large role in shaping foreign policy and that the president and secretary of state should do what was right in a way that's a little unrealistic.
Also, didn't he feel that Acheson was being a little too militaristic?
He did. Kennan intended containment to be primarily through political means, through things like economic aid, like the Marshall Plan, building a political alliance with Western Europe. But when containment started edging toward militarized means, for instance, establishing the NATO alliance, Kennan was afraid that was going too far and would solidify the East-West divide.
Even though NATO is a kind of a policy of containment.
Yes, but containment through military
threat.
Right.
He said that he wrote more when he was depressed. Was he starting to feel depressed as his ideas started to fall out of favor with the administration?
Yes, that's the case. In the latter part of 1948 and into 1949, the diary comes back into full flower, and we have long passages, and including passages about political issues, 1949, 1950, but he's being listened to less by the top officials.
Well, because he hoped to avoid military confrontation with the Soviet Union, he's often called a liberal. But was he a liberal?
No, I think he's a conservative in the old sense of conservative. He's certainly not a neoconservative. He is a conservative in the sense of a person who believed in tradition, who believed in, he's been called an organic conservative, a person who believed that mankind was a steward of the earth. He was suspicious of a lot of technological change. So I think he's conservative in the traditional sense of the word, to conserve a good society.
He seemed to have a real distaste for urban sprawl and, as you say, the speed of modern life. To some degree, he sounds like that old guy who says things are going to hell in a handbasket.
Well, to some extent, that's true. But in a way, I think part of the value of Kennan is that here we have throughout the 20th century, someone, and particularly in the latter part of the 20th century, someone who brings to the problems of that era the perspective of an earlier time. And I think it's valuable for people to just question things that we take for granted.
Well, there are also entries that reveal a less politically correct side of Kennan. He has homophobic views. He believes in eugenics. He supports apartheid. He also had pretty old-fashioned ideas about the role of women. So
that's certainly true.
Does that just make him a man of his time or a conservative of his time?
He's a man who, don't forget, his views are formed in early 20th century. Although he modified some of those views later on, his views toward, again, homosexuality, the role of women and so forth, are those of a man of the early 20th century. And as a conservative, he clung to those views more than he might have. Obviously, there are things to criticize with regard to Kennan, but that's certainly true. And these views are part of the part that's susceptible to criticism.
It's clear from the diaries just how ambitious Kennan was. What did he hope to accomplish in the end?
Well, I think his aspirations always exceeded what he was able to achieve.
He gets frustrated when he's not listened to.
Right. Because he really thought that he had good advice for the United States in terms of his domestic policy and foreign policy, and that his ideas, that he was more prescient than most other people.
But he was still named U.S. ambassador to Russia in 1952, then expelled only 5 months later, declared persona non grata. What went wrong?
Well, first of all, he was appointed ambassador at a time when the Truman administration was basically letting the clock run out.
Because Eisenhower has already won the election.
Well, no, but the administration, this was in May 1952. So Truman was not going to run again in any case. And they wanted Truman and Acheson wanted the clock to run the clock out also with regard to something else. And that is what they were really interested in was integrating West Germany into the Western alliance. And there was a whole bunch of political treaties and so forth that were supposed to be signed with West Germany. And so actually, the Cold War tensions that were fairly high at that time as a result of the unresolved Korean War, which is dragging on and other kinds of issues, Acheson and Truman regarded those Cold War tensions as valuable in terms of pressuring West Germany to join the Western alliance and pressing the French to allow the West Germans to join the Western alliance and so forth. Kennan, in contrast, wanted to use his ambassadorship as an opportunity to open negotiations with the Russians and try to defuse Cold War tensions. And Kennan was very happy to settle for or to move toward, rather than West Germany and the Western Alliance, reunifying West Germany and East Germany, as the Soviets indicated they might be interested in at the time. They might be interested in that. This is 1952. And Kennan saw that, a reunified neutral Germany, as a better outcome than a West Germany rigidly divided into two military blocs and a Europe rigidly divided into two military blocs. Because Kennan was looking toward an end to the Cold War.
But then why was he expelled by first of all, did he know Stalin?
He didn't know Stalin personally. They had met on a few occasions, but he did not know Stalin personally. And he was frustrated because he went to Moscow with nothing to offer the Russians in terms of negotiations. Again, Acheson and Truman were not interested in negotiations, didn't give Kennan any carrots to offer the Soviets. The Soviets were also suspicious of the U.S., with good reason at that time. And Kennan expected that Stalin would appreciate that here was George F. Kennan appointed the ambassador. George F. Kennan, who knew Russian language, who loved Russian literature. Kennan, who had been there before in the 30s and the 40s. And he expected Stalin and the Soviet officials to welcome him. That didn't happen. So here was Kennan frustrated from Moscow's silence, so to speak, and Washington's not giving him any tools to negotiate. And as the summer of 52 went on, he became more and more frustrated. He was also assailed by the anti-American propaganda that was product of the Korean War going on, unfair attacks saying that the United States was practicing bacteriological warfare and so forth. And by the end of the summer of 1952, Kennan was highly frustrated, and he was going to a conference in London. He stopped off in Berlin. This is the Nazi capital only 7 years earlier. And a reporter asked him what life was like in Moscow, whether he was able to associate with Russians. And Kennan was being prevented from associating with Russians by secret police restrictions and so forth. And he burst out by saying, well, the life in the Soviet Union is as restrictive almost as life when he was in Nazi Germany as an intern in 1942. And his saying that in the
comparing the Soviets with the Nazis.
Exactly. In the former Nazi capital, he knew that was the wrong thing to say. In the Soviets,
But was he not cut out for diplomacy? Because then later he goes to Yugoslavia, appointed by Kennedy, another hotspot, resigns a couple of years later because relations between Yugoslavia and the United States worsened because of the way Tito was playing both ends against the middle.
I think Kennan was suited for diplomacy if he was going to be given something to negotiate. I think that was the problem with Moscow in 52, and the problem with regard to Yugoslavia is that Congress removed most favored nation trade status with Yugoslavia, and the Yugoslavs reacted negatively to that. And again, Kennan didn't have any carrots. It only had sticks in 52 in Moscow and in Belgrade in the 60s. They only had sticks, not carrots.
Isn't that a problem we face right now when dealing with Vladimir Putin? We have sticks, but no carrots.
Well, that may be. I think that is the case. And in fact, Kennan, in some respects, foresaw the problem that we're in now.
In what way?
Well, let me just read very briefly a selection from the diary of January 1997. It's at a moment when the NATO the U.S. and its NATO allies were making plans to bring into NATO Poland, the Czech Republic, and Hungary. And Kennan wrote in his diary, this is January 4th, 1997, that the Russians will not react wisely and moderately to the decision of NATO to extend its boundaries to the Russian frontiers is clear. I would expect a strong militarization of Russian political life to the tune of a great deal of hysterical exaggeration of the danger and a falling back into the time-honored vision of Russia as the innocent object of the aggressive lusts of a wicked and heretical world environment.
Sounds like an op-ed piece today.
Right. And then it goes on just a little bit more. There will be efforts by the Russian leadership to persuade neighbors to transform the relationship with Russia into one of an out-and-out military alliance and to develop much closer relations with Iran and China with a view to forming a strongly anti-Western military bloc, as a counterweight to a NATO pressing for world domination. And then he says, thus will develop a wholly and even tragically unnecessary division between East and West and, in effect, a renewal of the Cold War.
Wow, that that could have been written today.
Yeah.
Well, so what do you think about the disintegration of the Soviet Union in the 80s?
Well, he thought that was he thought the Gorbachev's efforts to perestroika and glasnost, he favored that to bring much more humane relations, realistic relations in terms of the Russian economy and Russian social and political life. But he was not happy with the breakup of the Soviet Union because he thought that would lead to too much chaos, too much instability in a delicate area.
Now, after he left the diplomatic corps, so to speak, he made his way to the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, New Jersey, run by Robert Oppenheimer. Was that kind of a soft landing for Kennett?
It certainly was. Kennett always had a scholarly cast to his mind. In fact, before he wrote the Long Telegram, he was talking about resigning from the State Department because he felt he wasn't being listened to and becoming an academic. So that was always something that he enjoyed.
And that's what he did for the rest of his life.
Right. He wrote and
gave speeches.
He wrote 20 books. He won almost every book prize there is to win.
He won two Pulitzers, National Book Award, two National Book Awards, a Bancroft Prize as well.
Right.
And it's rumored that he never gave the same speech twice.
That's what his secretary said.
He was married to his wife Annalise for 73 years.
Right.
What was
their
marriage like?
I think it was overall a very good marriage.
How much did we learn from the diaries?
Well, he was, again, discreet. He's the diplomat with regard to foreign policy secrets, and he's the diplomat with regard to, or discreet with regard to family issues. I think that Annalise was, in most respects, a very good partner for him.
He believed in a connection between creativity and sexual freedom. Did that create tension in the marriage?
It did. Kennan had a number of affairs and a number of, it's unclear from the diary whether they're all affairs or fantasies about affairs. What's clear is that he had guilt about this. And he felt conflicted. He articulated a tension probably that many people feel between wanting sexual freedom on the one hand and then also feeling that obligation and responsibility is the other thing they're pulling you.
Well, they both lived very long. She died in 98 or something like that?
And he
was 101 when he died in 2005.
Right.
Did his age start to come across in the diary entries?
Actually, that's kind of a poignant part of the diary. I think that's a valuable part of the diary because Kennan documents meticulously his physical, psychic, and intellectual decline. And so here's a decline that many people experience, but it's written down in the diary in the elegant kind of language.
He once commented that he thought his journals fell short. What did he find lacking in them?
Well, again, his standards are always much higher than what he could achieve. He wanted every single phrase in the diary to be a golden nugget, and only many of them were.
Now, I can't imagine that you read every page.
I did.
You did?
Oh, yeah, I did, yes.
As you went through these thousands of pages that Kennan wrote, did your view of him change?
Not really. I think, though, well, the one thing that did, I guess my views of him were reinforced in certain respects, especially with regard to the incredible extent of his aspiration. He always, even in 2003, when he's 99 years old, he's not half expecting, but he thinks the Bush administration should consult him on what it's doing in the Middle East.
He did hate or have contempt for Ronald Reagan.
He did, and I think he did also for the George W. Bush.
And for the same reasons?
Yes, he regarded Reagan, I think it also was Reagan's manner that turned off Kennan, but he regarded George W. Bush as an irresponsible adventurer.
Frank Castigliola is an author, a historian at the University of Connecticut who specializes in U.S. foreign relations in the 20th century, and he has edited the Kennan Diaries. It is published by Norton. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Well, thank you for having me.